Joining me in studio, I am absolutely thrilled to say, is Mandy Wiener. Mandy, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Good.
Good, good, good. So the first question I have to ask you, because it always bothers me, is if one of your kids steal a chocolate or eat a piece of chocolate cake that they weren't meant to have, do they know that you are going to hunt them down relentlessly to find out who was the one that actually ate that chocolate cake?
No, because I would know straight away.
You'd know who it was. Right.
So I mean, this is the story of my life, basically. Right. This is what happens.
Well, like, that's exactly.
Frequently.
Yes. So, right. In fact, I remember our kids would always say, you know, to my wife that she must have a sixth sense because she always knew. The fact that they were covered in chocolate generally was a bit of a giveaway.
I do always say, though, that dealing with children is way harder than dealing with, like, hitmen or politicians.
Because, well, because they're more crafty or what?
That is more testing.
Yeah, you know, and maybe a little more emotional. So, I mean, you've spent a good portion of your working life involved in investigating corruption and dealing with the most horrific people in South African history. Well, I'm not sure South African history because I think we've had some rotters in the past as well. But sort of certainly the new brand of rogue. How do you differentiate? How do you keep it from entering the sanctity of your own home?
You have to be quite clear about that. Mm. You know, I have to draw a clear distinction between what is work and what is personal. And you know, those two should never cross.
Right.
Sometimes it's impossible for
that because social media also attacks you at home.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. So I'm quite careful about that, about what I make public and what I don't.
Right.
But I'm also not naive about it.
Right.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out where I live or where my children go to school.
Right.
Particularly because I'm on this radio station talking about
right.
it, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I am quite careful, but I also would never do anything that is a direct risk to my personal safety or to that of my children. But also, you know, we're very fortunate in this country that journalists aren't targeted to the extent that they are in, like, Colombia or
right.
Mexico or wherever, you know. But I am quite conscious about
it. I was thinking about that because to some extent, you know, and it comes across in a lot of your writing, is that even though you are dealing with the underbelly of society, there's almost a kind of a mutual respect that they have for you and the way in which you write about them. You're very, very careful about portraying facts and not going the emotional or emotive route, that can do, you know, do other damage. So there does seem to be this mutual respect, and I use the word in quotes.
Yeah, so I do get that a lot. I mean, people often comment that that's the case. You know, I think that's because I try not to be quick to judge. Right. Often with journalists, there's a default position that they will immediately write a kind of narrative about someone. You know, so, Angelo Gritzi is this kind of guy, and
right.
nobody really wants to delve deeper to find out the context and the backstory to that. Whereas I do try and give these characters a platform, an opportunity. So that plays both ways. I mean, I get criticized for that as well. I get slammed for giving people a platform, for glorifying criminals. But for me, I think it's more important to actually be informed and have that knowledge and hear from them than to not know what's going on or what they're thinking.
And it's always looked to me as, you know, we were just discussing off air, I'm always fascinated at what drives them. What caused somebody to, because nobody wakes up one morning and decides to be a Gupta. You know, it's a process. We know that. It's a process that one step leads to another that leads to another to become an Agrizi or a Gupta or whomever you are. So I'm fascinated by that process.
It's the pathology.
Yes.
You know,
that's exactly what it is. Yes, that's what I find more interesting.
And that's why I love people and I love people's stories because it's really, you know, drilling down into understanding that psyche and what motivates them and why people do certain things. And it's a problem also because I believe in, like, the innate goodness of all people, which...
That's so interesting, you know, that you say that.
Yeah, so,
you know, I think the assumption would have been the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting because even though I've dealt with the worst of the worst, you know, we also deal with the best of the best.
Mm.
And it still makes me think that, you know, people are inherently good.
Right.
Which is quite hard to reconcile when, you know, so many people are just inherently bad.
Yeah.
And have done
so much damage. Time is 8:14. I'm chatting to Mandy. And if you want to weigh in on this conversation or ask a question, 34519 or 061-895-1019. That's how you can get hold of us. I read a lot of the Dan Ariely's books on honesty and integrity, and the one thing that he says is that we all have this need to feel good about ourselves, and we all cheat, but we cheat unto a point that we push back from our self-esteem says, I don't want to be perceived as being dishonest, so therefore I'm not going to cheat beyond that. But once we've crossed that line, a certain amount of cognitive dissonance kicks in and people start to justify and make peace with their actions in order to feel good about themselves. Would you agree with that understanding of corruption as a starting point?
So to a large degree, yes. And I'll give you two examples of that. So Angelo Agretti, in his statement to the Zondo Commission, mm-hmm. in his actual affidavit, there's a paragraph in which he says, look, we started doing this thing. It became a culture. It became so acceptable that we actually didn't realize that it was wrong. So we'd start the day with Gavin Watson's prayer meetings.
Right,
which
is incredible.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we would pack these brown envelopes, which are actually gray envelopes, like, right. interestingly, at Posasa. And then we would bribe people for tenders. And he said that it became so acceptable that it was just part of their culture that they didn't think anything about it. So I think that that does happen. So it is kind of the frog in the pot of boiling
right,
water, you know,
right.
where it just becomes so acceptable that people don't think. And you hear it all the time, oh, but everyone's doing it. It's how you survive in
right.
the corporate culture
right.
in South Africa. You know, you have to grease palms to get tenders. So yes, on that. And then if you look at somebody like Marcus Joester at Steinhoff, where I've had a long discussion with Rob Rose, who wrote Steinheist. And he was saying that, you know, what happened with Marcus Joester is that I don't think he necessarily set out to build this enormous con, but he kept trying to, you know, it's a kind of process that he sees often with these snakes in suits. You know, where you start plugging holes and then other holes start bursting and then you got to plug those and you have to keep shifting money around. And
so they don't start off with the intention of doing, whereas I would imagine that Bosasa did, actually. I think that might be a little different. That from day one they seem to be quite open about the fact that they were going to get these tenders one way or another.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think somebody like allegedly,
Allegedly,
Watson,
of course.
You know, clearly had this was an orchestrated, premeditated, like deliberate campaign to corrupt. It was their business operation. It was their modus operandi. And that's undoubtable.
Time is 8:17. I'm chatting to Mandy Wiener. If you want to join in the conversation, 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Morning Mayhem on 101.9
Chai FM. Time is 8:21. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm chatting in studio to Mandy Wiener. Unsigned wants to know, is the Kebble matter over?
Look, I don't think anybody really knows what happened there. You know, there's this narrative that has been told by Mikey Schultz and everyone about what really happened. I don't know if that's the truth. I'll never know.
I've
heard so many different theories, conspiracy
theories. The strange thing is, you know, when, you know, if you follow sort of the South African, our process, you know, first there was the Waterkloof landing and then there was Sun City and then slowly the whole Gupta thing started to develop and we thought that those were the biggest villains in all the world. And then suddenly it's all about Bosasa. And one wonders if there's, you know, what more don't we know as South Africans?
So as an example of that, so Jackie Selebi got convicted of taking 117,000 rand.
Right.
Like, how much is that? You know?
Yeah.
And when you think about it.
It's one grey envelope.
Mitsubishi Jonas got offered 600 million rand and got told to bring a tog bag to take it. You know, like it's crazy when you think about the scale of it.
Mm.
You know, I still think that in terms of actual numbers, I think the Gupta corruption was far worse than Bosasa actually. I mean, but it's hard to define.
Do you think we'll ever quantify the numbers?
I don't think there's a sliding scale of corruption.
No, of course not.
So, and you know, I'm always quite wary of that, saying, that's worse corruption than that. Corruption is corruption.
Of course.
You know, I don't know if we'll ever quantify it because for me, what has been the real cost is the destruction of law enforcement agencies and state-owned enterprises.
Absolutely. Mm.
So it's not necessarily the money. You know, it's not necessarily how much the ESCOM spent on coal at Optimum, you know. It's not about that necessarily. It's about the cost to the actual institution of ESCOM and the knock-on effect of that. It's about the evisceration of law enforcement agencies and that capture of the state for me is far more detrimental and you can't quantify that.
It was interesting, you know, my brother-in-law was here, he was visiting from overseas and he was driving with his wife, with my sister-in-law, and they were pulled over and the cops asked them for a bribe and he was horrified as a foreigner, and he came back and it was one of the most powerful statements I've heard somebody make, and it was just so simple. And he said, if the police are not protecting you in this country, who is? And when you talk about the breakdown, and of course that's on such a small scale, but actually it's reflective of a massive, massive problem, because the law enforcement agencies that we have relied on to protect our safety, to protect the assets of the country, every one of them has been basically destroyed through corruption.
So there's been this malicious campaign to literally hollow out law enforcement agencies. So over the past decade or so, we've seen a lot of good civil servants being pushed out and these different organizations being captured. So, you know, for example, at the NPA, you had somebody like Linus Breitenbach that was pushed out and a whole lot of really good prosecutors leaving. At SARS, you had the rogue unit, so-called rogue unit, which never really existed. Under Johan van Lochrenberg, that entire investigative capacity no longer exists there. If you look at the Hawks, Burning and Tlemesa came in and replaced every single provincial head. You know, so there's really just been this depletion. You know, at the Hawks, there is no longer one forensic accountant that is employed by the Hawks.
No.
How do you deal with
the
something
Hawks
like...
The Hawks do not have one forensic accountant.
One forensic accountant. So how do you deal with VBS? How do you deal with Steinhoff?
How do you who's deal qualified with to anything? Be able to deal with that?
They just can't.
Right.
I spoke recently at the Independent Forensic Practitioners Conference in Pretoria. And I looked around the room and it was full of ex-police officers and prosecutors that had gone into the private sector.
Wow.
Like top police officers and prosecutors that had gone either to start their own you know, private companies that do forensics, or they'd gone to auditing firms which have their own problems.
Right.
It just means that the capacity is no longer there. So it's going to take a long time to rebuild.
Well, we know that the NPA is being rebuilt, and we spoke on the show to Glynis Breitenbach, and it was amazing to hear her positivity about the appointment at the NPA. That at least that's now going to be moving in the right direction. Part of me feels the negativity that South Africans are feeling is a process that we have to go through as all of this is exposed. It's almost opening a wound that has to be washed out before it can heal. But we are in a very negative space, and it's not unreasonable for us to feel this way when you look at the level of corruption and you look at the systematic breakdown of law enforcement.
So I think that South Africans have corruption fatigue.
Yes, we do.
You know, I think that every time we hear a story about another Bosasa or some other thing, it's like, oh, we know it's bad.
Right.
You know, like the Gupta leaks were incredible, but at the end of it, you know, people were like, I actually cannot read another 2,000-word article about how bad the corruption is.
Mm.
So there is the concern that people become apathetic about it. To be clear, I'm very optimistic about the country.
Repeat that sentence.
I am very optimistic about the country.
Great.
People cannot understand why, and I'll tell you why.
Tell me why.
So if you look at each of these institutions that was eroded or eviscerated, at every single one of them, since Cyril Ramaphosa has come in, there have been appointments to attempt to turn them around or to rectify them. Mm. So, for example, at the police – For the first time in years, we have a permanent National Police Commissioner, a permanent Head of Crime Intelligence, and a permanent Head of the Hawks. The Head of Crime Intelligence is Peter Jacobs, who has a long history of, a career in intelligence. Although he is having, there is a fight back, obviously, from within, because they're going to be there.
As you expect it to be.
Godfrey LeBier, who's the Head of the Hawks, literally wrote the textbook on organized crime.
Right.
Literally, I mean, his doctoral thesis was on organized crime. But he is still dealing with the after effects of the appointments made by Burning and Clemenza, so it's going to take time. But the right person is in the leadership role. At the NPA, we had a transparent public process to interview the new NDPP. And Shamila Batoy, I think, was by far the best candidate.
Incredible.
And she is now there.
Right.
You know, but if you look at the Mukhoro inquiry with Nomthobo Jiba and Lawrence Mkhwebi and what's going on and just, geez, what's falling out there, it's going to take time to rebuild. It's about capacity. So Ramaphosa has announced the scorpions, non-scorpions, because it's not actually the scorpions. We just want it to be. It's about capacity. How do you get the right people back?
Right.
At SARS, Tom Moyani is gone.
Right.
So
this is the process that it's going through. Every organization has to be recaptured. It's actually a war, and we've lost it. It's almost like we've lost territory, and now it has to be recaptured, and that is what's happening.
And people expect it to happen overnight.
Well, it can't.
It can't.
You know what? When Paris was liberated after war, it took years. It does take years to rebuild. That's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, Ramaphosa speaks about the 9 wasted years.
Mm.
And it might have been 9 wasted years, but the knock-on effect of that is so much longer.
Mm.
So, I mean, for me, it's about changing the culture in the country. So that means making sure South Africans become more active in terms of civil society. Because if you look back, every time there was a failing of leadership in South Africa, it was always civil society that stepped in. So with Richard Mdluli and Nomthobo Jiba, it was freedom under law that went to court. With the social grants, it was the black sash. With the textbooks, it was equal education.
With the Guptas, it was the banks.
It was the banks.
Sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So with Life is Said of Many, it was Section 27, whatever. It's always civil society that steps in and fulfills that role, and that's why we need to have active citizens. But also, it's about changing the mindset, right? So if you've got a kid that's going to go study law, does he go and do his articles at a Workspins or a Weber's or wherever, or does he go and become a state prosecutor?
Right.
You need to change that. So, like in the States, it's
one of the most fantastic bits of training you can have.
Yeah, become the Attorney General, become
a state
prosecutor.
Of course.
It's illustrious. So we need to change that psyche in this country.
I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. All right, Dov says you can do articles at KPMG. Thanks, Dov. I don't know why you're letting us know that. I think most people knew that. And does Mandy think that we will ever get our money back, South Africa will ever get their money back from the VBS's, Yusta, Bosasa, etc., etc., etc.? Never.
No. I just don't think so. I think that it would be impossible.
How? Yeah. Sadly, I think that is the Unsigned also asking, do you think that we are ever going to see justice for people like the Guptas? I mean, are we going to see them in court? Are we going to see Jacob Zuma being prosecuted successfully?
I get asked this question a lot.
I'm sure.
I just don't know the answer to it.
Mm.
You know, I would like to believe that we would.
Right.
There have been so this idea that the NPA is broken is kind of a misnomer, because there are still successful prosecutions happening every day.
Right.
You know, there are still people that are being convicted, that are being put in jail, high profile cases, criminal cases. But then you look at something like a complex financial crime, and I'm just not sure that there is the capacity to deal with that.
Mm.
If you look at what happened with the NPA's challenge against the Guptas' property in the Free State around the Estina dairy farm, and they got absolutely hammered in the High Court in the Free State,
right.
and that just goes to show that they haven't got the understanding to deal with these kinds of crimes, and that's what's going to make it so difficult. Same with VBS. you know, to lose somebody like Glynis Breitenbach at the SCCU, where they were dealing with these, you know, she, when she left, I mean, she was carrying the Tannenbaum docket, she was carrying the 2010 stadium corruption docket. You know, there's all of these complex crimes that have just stalled, completely stalled. And not to say that there aren't other very good, capable prosecutors at the NPA. There's still great prosecutors working every day.
Right.
I just don't know if there's that depth of knowledge and understanding.
And experience.
But, you know, the other alternative is that they can outsource to private counsel. You know, you could appoint somebody to lead a prosecution. But I think we need a unit like the Scorpions to return again, where you've got prosecutorial-led investigations. So I'm encouraged by this directorate that has been announced by Ramaphosa at the State of the Nation address. It's important to point out that it is not the same as the Scorpions.
In what way is it different?
So it's a directorate. So it's kind of like one of the directorates that were appointed under Percy Sun, for example, years ago to look at organized crime. So it's kind of like an arm within the NPA. It will be prosecutorial-led investigations as well. You've got to find the right people. I don't know where they're going to find those people because everyone's left. They can't look at the hawks necessarily.
Right, because everybody's – well, is everybody tainted?
Not everybody's tainted,
yeah,
no.
That's the
But I think it would be great if they did establish, as the Constitutional Court described, a independent investigative unit that has a, you know, completely independent reporting line that is, you know, completely isolated from political interference. That would be ideal to have a standalone unit like that again.
Benjamin is saying, and I think it's a very good point, hi Howard, Mandy's right, what those 9 years have done is destroy our faith in government and government departments and their representatives. Whatever they say and do, we just don't believe them. And I think there's a massive question of credibility, because I think one of the most important, and I wrote an article this week for News 24, and I was saying that actually instead of marketing to foreign investors, actually we need to be marketing to South Africa. We need to believe in the product. We need to believe in government, the good faith of government, and that we want to grow this country.
The problem is that we're also not willing to give them a chance.
So
how do
we
balance
that?
In a lot of Shabbos table conversations, people are just right. They're completely right. Ah, that's country.
No, I can't stand that.
It's so bad. What do you expect? You know?
Yeah.
You know, people aren't willing to look for any kind of glimmer of hope and see where there is actually, you know, functioning.
And it doesn't
government.
Mean being naive or living in denial. It's a matter of seeing everything. Right.
Absolutely. You know, and I do think that, you know, there are glimmers of hope, that there are some things that are working. And we can't write it off completely. You know, we can't just say, you know, this is, it's finished. We're the next Zimbabwe.
I can't stand the conversation.
Yeah, it kills me as well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, don't be naive. You know, but also don't keep quiet. So be an active citizen. Phone your radio station, tweet, hold power to account. Give your skills or your services or whatever kind of
and vote.
Talent you have to a civil society organization. Vote, you know, be active. Don't bribe Metro police officers.
100%.
You know, don't be part of the problem.
And we are seeing that, by the way. You know, I certainly, from speaking to a lot of my friends, they are absolutely taking a stand on little things like being asked for a bribe by a Metro police officer. And I think that's incredible. We are seeing that, people pushing back and saying, you know what, write me a fine. I would rather pay the fine than buy you a cold drink or breakfast. And so I do think we are seeing civil society pushing back in that way. But at the same time, we've just got to have that balance, and we've got to not just write off everything. You know, it's this whole concept of confirmation bias. So we keep looking for the things that are confirming our own narrative. Stop doing that. You know, question your narrative.
And you know, we still have, I mean, for example, we've got such a strong functioning judiciary.
Absolutely.
That has saved us on so many occasions.
We've got a media that is unbelievably strong and has been the force that has driven this. We've got a judiciary that is independent, that has held Zuma to account. That's why between those two factors alone, there is hope.
Precisely. I mean, I was about to say that. So look at the media and what happened with the Gupta leaks.
Mm.
You know, essentially, the Gupta leaks brought down a president.
Sure.
You know, they absolutely did.
Yeah.
And you have to look at the independence that the media has in the country, the strength the media has, and how we hold power to account.
And the fact that we are having these inquiries also says it all. In another country, you're probably not going to. In a country that is beyond the level of you know, further down the low, a negative road, you're never going to see these things.
So I have a very complex view on all of these inquiries that are going on. You know, I've sat in many inquiries, so I've spent many days listening to evidence and inquiries, and I do find that at the end of it, often it's, you know, the outcomes get ignored, so they just kind of, you know, for what purpose?
Right.
So my view on the inquiries is I would much rather see Angelo Agretti testifying in a court of law against Gavin Watson than I would at an inquiry. Mm. You know, I would much rather the criminal process was running than an inquiry.
Right.
However, it's better than nothing. So I think that what happened was in the Mokgoro inquiry, in the PRC inquiry, in Zondo, all of them, what happened was there was a realization that the law enforcement agencies just were not doing anything. So they needed to act on something.
Mm.
And at least now we are being privy to what was going on behind the scenes. We're at least learning about it. So at least we know what was going on. I just think that it's going to compromise the criminal cases. So the charges were withdrawn against Dudazani Zuma and against Ajay Gupta because they were waiting for John Nuss to finish his testimony at the Zondo Commission.
Mm.
So how long do we wait? You know, this could go on for years before we see any prosecutions. I'm not sure that's the right approach either.
Right. In fact, somebody said to me the other day, and it happens to be somebody who is very involved in business, very, very positive about South Africa. And he said to me, excuse me, that he thinks it's worse because if we uncover everything like this and we see the negativity and we don't follow it up, then it's almost better not to have had an inquiry, rather bury it under the rug and carry on by having rooted out corruption.
Yeah,
but I don't think
I don't
you can
know
do
I agree
that.
With that.
So
the big thing for me is that justice not only needs to be done, it needs to be seen to be done.
Mm, 100%.
Particularly with the estate capture crimes. And that's because, you know, people need to see action, they need people to be held accountable.
Mm.
And I've written about this extensively. So Shamila Batoy can come in and say the right things and do the right things, but we want to see not only people being charged, we want to see successful prosecutions. So we've seen people being charged, we've seen Duduzani Zuma, we've seen these arrests on Bosasa. We need to actually see successful prosecutions. We need convictions.
Mm. Ms. Runji Chetty says, thanks to Mandy Wiener for being a voice of reason and wisdom in South Africa and for her sterling work. Mervin says, with the ANC track record, it's quite hard to have confidence in them. Which I get, and
depends which ANC you're talking about.
Right. Well, you know, they're two acting concurrently, which is a little confusing, certainly. But also, you know, the way in which I often the thing that I often say to people is, just look at it from a time perspective. Look at where we are today versus where we were a year ago versus where we were 6 months before that. And if you can show, and we can, you know, show that there has most definitely been progress towards rooting out corruption. 18 months ago, we had Jacob Zuma as a president. We were so close to having Skhosana Dlamini Zuma as our president. We've forgotten that. You know, we also have to understand that Cyril Ramaphosa has a very, very precarious, he came in under a precarious ANC that he's been balancing the whole way through. But Gigaba has gone. You know, we've got to look at these things, you know, one step by step to see what's been achieved.
Yeah, you have to have that benefit of hindsight.
Mm.
I mean, think about it, literally a year and I think a week ago, Zuma was still president.
Amazing that.
Yeah,
amazing.
So you have to look at it with
perspective. Yes, of course, it's Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so you have to look at it with perspective. You know, it's... And you have to remember, as you say, Ramaphosa won with such a slim margin at Nasrec that it's very difficult for him to do anything. And it is a precarious balancing act that he's doing. So people need to be patient.
And we've always seen that about him. He's played the long game, and he's played it very well. If he had pushed back harder during his tenure as deputy president, there's no chance he would have been in this position.
Definitely not. It is difficult because people also say that, you know, Ramaphosa needs to be held accountable. He was part of that.
I get that also.
Of that ANC leadership. You know, he can't just say it wasn't me. But I do get the sense that there is definitely an intention on his part and those around him from the Pravin Gordhans that there is an intention to kind of reclaim the state.
So Mandy, just to summarize what I think you are saying is there is a tremendous amount of corruption. There has been a corruption beyond our imagination, but we are moving in the right direction, and we just have to be patient, and we've got to be active ourselves and hold our leaders to account.
That's the Twitter version of what I've just said.
There we go. Summarize for anybody that might have just tuned in. That was Mandy Wiener joining me in studio. Fantastic to chat to you. Thank you for taking the time. It is 8:47. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem.